Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
What you're about to hear is a program that is geared more for parents than it is for young children. In fact, if you have any kids listening with you right now, you might want to go straight to our website at homeward.com so you can review the program on your own.
Pornography. What kid is not going to now experience pornography? And yet, what are we saying to kids about this incredible change of how kids almost sometimes brag about the fact that they're looking at something pornographic?
Dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, man. You're just going on there and pointing, click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
I agree.
Unbelievable.
Computers can do that?
Dad, please, you're embarrassing us.
I'm Jim Burns. Well, family home life has changed quite a bit over the past few decades. In a previous generation, well, morals and values were passed along to their kids from their parents and even the grandparents. But today, it's a bit of a different story. Many experts agree that a majority of young people are learning their values from the media. And the overarching message they're hearing is this: do whatever makes you feel good as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else. Well, this whatever mentality can be a real hindrance to spiritual growth as well as other aspects of your life. But it doesn't have to be that way in your home. During the next half hour, I'll continue my conversation with author and educator Sean McDowell on raising bold kids in a whatever world. So keep it right here for a very important program here on Homeward. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh, and on today's program, you're in for a treat. The topic is a tough one, but the guest is a great one. Sean McDowell is with us. We're having this continuing conversation on raising bold kids in a whatever world. If you've ever had a kid who just kind of puts his hoodie up over his ears and kind of lowers his face a little bit, you try to correct him on something, he says, whatever. Well, those are the values that a lot of kids are bringing into their adult years right now. And we as parents can work to help them have a real solid biblical foundation to stand on and not just this whatever attitude. And that's our topic of conversation today. Keep it right here at the end of the program. I'll let you know how you can get a copy of the audio CD of this broadcast. And now with part one of today's program, here's Jim. Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. A continuing conversation today with Sean McDowell. We're talking about raising bold kids in a whatever world. Wouldn't that be nice? You know, the world today is struggling with what we call a biblical worldview. So many kids don't have that biblical worldview. Sean has written a great book called Ethics. That's E-T-H-I-X, Being Bold in a Whatever World. Really good book. I read it this weekend. It's a book for kids, and I highly recommend that you get this. Listen, he's the head of the Bible department and teaches philosophy and literature at Capistrano Valley Christian School, which is right down the street. My kids actually went to that school for some of their years. Heads up the teen track of Worldview Weekends and is also married to Stephanie. The McDowells have two children. They live here in Southern California. And Sean, of course, the son of Josh McDowell. Welcome to our broadcast again.
Jim, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Great conversation. You know, I have this deep concern that kids today don't have a worldview, and yet they've gone to great schools like yours. You know, they're raised in the church. They have Christian homes. And yet the fact is, as we were talking about in a previous conversation, that it just isn't happening. Now, I want you to help parents understand how we can change that and how can we dramatically change what goes on in the home to get kids more lined up with a biblical worldview. So when they do go away, they're going to be one of these people who are go against the grain of the culture and actually stay in the church and love God and live that way.
I tell you what's really interesting. I saw a study that 50 years ago, three factors shaped the worldview development of a young person. Two of them that stood out are the pictures that are in the home send a message about the values of the family. Wow. Second was conversations with parents over the dinner table. That's where values are passed and ideas are discussed about. The same study said, where do kids get their values today? They said largely from the media. Now, every study, and you work with families, so you know this, all studies show that parents do have the most influence on their kids, but sometimes we don't know how. Sometimes we don't take the time to do that. I think there's really two components to doing it. One is a relationship. And you've heard my dad say this, and it's true, is that kids don't respond to truth. they respond to relationships. And I think all studies show that even high school and junior high students, as squirrely and wild as they act, they want relationships with their parents and their mom and dad. They need it. But second, there's the level of ideas and a kid's beliefs. And worldviews are always best taught in the context of a relationship. And I think if we start to take the two of those seriously, we can make a difference and see our kids build a biblical worldview.
And it's interesting to say that because kids really want to be connected with their parents. You know, a lot of parents, especially parents of teens and even some preteens, say, you know, my kids don't want to hang out with me. Well, they sort of don't want to always hang out with you. But the fact of the matter is studies you're talking about show that they really want a relationship with their parents. We just maybe have to do it a little differently. But speaking of relationship, one of the things that parents struggle with is talking to their kids about sex and sexuality. And today's culture, a lot of kids, even Christian kids, have some kind of strange views about sex and sexuality, and it does come from the media. When you said the pictures, I went back to our house, and we have pictures of our family, and we have pictures of Hawaii. That's pretty much all we have up there. And pretty much, I think that is our deal at the Burns household. I don't know. But anyway, I want to go back to this idea of sexuality. You know, one of the biggest decisions a kid will face growing up is whether or not to be sexually involved with someone. How do you help kids make the right decision sexually when the world is pushing them so often in the wrong direction?
First thing I'd say to parents is they have to be willing to talk to their kids. The number one factor that will shape a kid's worldview about anything, in particular sexuality, is the parents. And I know a lot of parents feel like, well, who am I to talk? I made mistakes. How much do I say to my kids? And I would say, you know what? To some degree, as strong as this may sound, we have to get over it. And we have to be willing, because if we don't and we made decisions that hurt us in that area, it will be compounded in the lives of our kids. But it starts early. I mean, it doesn't start, oh, my kid's 16 years old, and I need to sit down and talk to him about sex. And I teach at a Christian school. I ask my freshmen every year, I say, how many of your parents have actively talked to you about sexuality? I'm telling you, every year, it's probably 50%.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's that we have one big talk about sex. I think it begins early when kids are even 2 and 3 doing right. little things. And it's kind of peppered as opportunities come up.
Right.
And I think what my parents did is they wanted me to hear things first from them before I heard it in television, before I heard it from my friends. So as issues came up in the context of a relationship, I felt safe to come to them and talk about issues.
No, I appreciate that. It's funny because your dad had this Why Wait campaign, and I spoke a lot on sexuality, still do. And I can remember one time my daughter, Becca, was actually going to the school that you teach at, and I really wanted her to hear my talk. So I took her to a place, fed her great food. Her favorite food was Mexican food. I took her to her favorite place, and then she came to the thing, didn't tell her that it was on sexuality. And then when it was done, she said, Dad, you probably brought me here. So not just because you were talking to all those kids about it, but you wanted to talk to me about it. And it was true, actually. I got caught.
Jim, you are just as shameless as my dad. You know what? And I sometimes saw it like your daughter did. I said, I know my dad's working it.
Yeah.
Whether he'd play a certain song so we would talk about it. We'd be at the dinner table and go, hey, I saw this interesting article in the newspaper.
Right.
What did you guys think about it? And at the time, I didn't see it, but as I look back, I realized he was very strategic and very intentional about whether it was reading a certain book. I mean, he'd give books like my book, Ethics. He'd go, son, if you read this, I'll give you the video game you want.
Right.
Well, I was a little entrepreneur, so I would do it, but he just said, I'm going to find any ways to get these ideas into my kid's head.
Well, and really, what you're doing is you're teaching all of us as parents that that's really the way we do this. It's not that you sit them down and say, okay, here's the birds and the bees talk. We'll do it once, and now you're going to be okay. It's actually a continual dialogue from, you know, like you say, 2 and 3 all the way up to the time they get out, and even sometimes after they get out of the house, you're still talking to them about that. That's very, very, obviously very important. Sexual purity. You write about it in your book, Ethics, sexual purity, you know, kind of a biblical case for sexual purity. Help us understand what that is and how you communicate that to kids, purity.
I think purity, it's interesting. There's a lot of power in defining words. I hear people talk about purity and they don't even define what it is. I think purity is a living according to our design. It's living according to the design and purpose that God has for us. When we look biblically, you know, there's 3 key purposes of sexuality. One is procreation in Genesis chapter 1. Number 2 is unity in Genesis chapter 2. And number 3 is pleasure. So I want to teach kids to understand there is such a thing as truth, that we're free when we live according to God's design, and that His design are these 3 factors. Now, I think one of the things that we've done in the church is we've poo-pooed and we've spoken negatively about sexuality.
Yeah.
I talked to one of my students, my seniors, 2 years ago. I said, tell me the message you've gotten in the church, whether at Christian school or growing up in the church. And girls said, don't have sex. It's bad. You might get AIDS and die.
That's right.
And my heart just broke.
Right.
Because I thought, here we are saying, it's so bad, don't do it, it's evil, when the Bible talks about sex being beautiful. There's a study in ethics, and the title in USA Today was, Aha, Call It the Revenge of the Church Ladies. And they showed that people specifically, this is at the University of Chicago and the University of California, Los Angeles, that people who follow the biblical pattern for sexuality experience the most and the best sex. So I want my students to know that God has the corner on sexuality. And when they step outside of his bounds, which is impurity, then they're going to make decisions that are going to hurt themselves, hurt other people, and ultimately hurt God. And I think when we cast sexual purity in a positive light and show that it's beautiful and show that it's good, we have the best chance of our kids living according to God's design.
Boy, I buy that. You are singing my song. He's singing my song, isn't he? You know, how do we, and you use this phrase that got out of your book, how do we act in love but not in arrogance? Because a lot of times kids will think that we're being arrogant when we say, no, this is the way, when we're speaking the truth in love. How do you do that?
I've actually been called arrogant before, and I'm a pretty nice guy. Yeah. And it's not because of anything that I said. It's simply because of a position that I held. Right? Just simply thinking that Jesus is the only truth, or maybe homosexuality is wrong, whatever that issue is, people are deemed arrogant. I guess I've found in my personal interaction, when I really love people, when I really listen to people, when I build relationships and spend time valuing people, it's hard for them to look you in the eye and call you arrogant. And I've also called people on this before. When I was having a discussion with a friend one time, and he goes, boy, that's really arrogant to think that you're right. And I called him, I said, you know, here we're having this great discussion. And all of a sudden you turned and you called me a name. I said, I haven't called you any names. I said, do you think it's right in good discussions to just insult somebody? And he didn't even realize it. He had been so conditioned by our culture that to think you're right makes you arrogant, that when I lovingly called him on it, he goes, yeah. He goes, you're right. And he actually apologized to me. Now, they don't always respond that way. I mean, we have no control over how people are going to respond to us.
Right.
But I think when we have a context of love, when we speak and we listen to people first, that we have a much better opportunity of minimizing being called arrogant.
Right. You know, I'm excited today about people like yourself and others who really are, you know, speaking the truth in love, but doing it with love and dialoguing and saying, you know what, here's where I'm coming from, you know, and not just putting people down. Because I think a previous generation of Christians did that. And, you know, we got a bad name for ourselves. So people think we're closed-minded and bigoted and everything else, when in fact it's very possible to have this kind of a conversation without being mean-spirited. We're going to take a break. Being bold in a whatever world, Sean McDowell.
And it's a great conversation today here on the Homeward Broadcast. If you missed any part of it, we always stream audio at homeward.com. You can sign up for our podcast through homeward.com as well. If you'd like the full-length audio CD, and sometimes the CDs are helpful because if you've got some parents who want to get together and have like a Bible study and have a discussion about this, the CD is a nice way to just kind of bring everybody into the conversation. Drop us a line, include a gift of any amount when you write to us at Homeward, Post Office Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, the zip code 92693.
What you're about to hear is a program that is geared more for parents than it is for young children. In fact, if you have any kids listening with you right now, you might want to go straight to our website at homeward.com so you can review the program on your own.
Welcome back. Boy, our time is going by too fast. Sean McDowell with us. He's written a great book called Ethics. We're talking about raising bold kids in a whatever world. One of the major issues for homeward people is that they want to build a legacy of faith from generation to generation, help their kids stand for biblical truth. And yet at the same time, we've got a lot of kids who are struggling with this like crazy. Today, we're talking about certain issues, happen to be talking about sexuality. And now I want to bring up the P word. Pornography. I'm concerned about it. You write about it in Ethics. What kid is not going to now experience pornography? And yet, what are we saying to kids about this incredible change of how kids almost sometimes brag about the fact that they're, you know, looking at something that is really pornographic?
Well, the average age a kid sees pornography now is about 10 years old.
That's right.
And I've heard studies coming out saying it's a lot earlier than that. And I think it's important for people to understand some of the change that's taken place even in the past decade. Pornography has become obviously more accessible with the internet. It's become more accepted. I mean, I'll hear students use the term porno. They'll say, oh, that's so porno. Is, you know, we say, oh, that's so cool.
Right.
The stigma of it is gone. It's become normalized. And you even see in a lot of women's magazines is they assume pornography is okay, and they talk about how just incorporate it into your sex life. So it's become accepted in many ways in the church. And last, pornography has become a lot more aggressive. So how do we deal with this in terms of our young people? What do we do? Well, the first thing is just to be willing to talk about it and deal with it in an honest manner. When we don't, it sends a message to kids with our lack of information, our lack of addressing it, that we're not comfortable. And they're going to, we know kids are going to assume false ideas if we're not crystal clear on what pornography is and address it with them.
Yeah.
The thing that I often bring back to young people is I'll ask them, I'll say, how does this change the way you view people and you look at people? And obviously, I mean, Hugh Hefner said that women are objects to be used by men and then discarded when they're done with it. So I have a lot of conversations with young people saying, look, do you realize that pornography, it objectifies women as objects? And it will prevent you from being able ever to love somebody for who they are.
No, you're right. You know, and it takes a picture. That picture is in your mind forever. We, as parents, have to be able to talk to our kids about it. And I appreciate the fact that you say you got to bring it up. I think that's the whole thing with sexuality. We've just got to be able to talk about it. Because if we're not talking about it with our kids, they're going to think, well, there's something wrong or it's not good, like you were saying earlier. So it's time to talk about it. I want to bring up another issue. Friends with benefits. You know, you talked a little bit about this in your book, Ethics. Basically, today's culture a lot of times will say, well, I'll do everything but have sexual intercourse. And sometimes even with just sort of friends. I mean, it's a new phrase that people are using. Talk about how that can also be a struggle.
Well, we hear friends with benefits. We hear about our hookup culture, right, which is just the idea that, hey, I can be involved sexually with somebody without a relational tie. And I think where this harms kids is, as we've talked about, one of the purposes of sexuality is unity. And that when we are involved in either a sex act or even kissing, the body is designed in a way that you're connecting to that person. And what happens is kids get older and they move on, those memories flood their mind and steal their ability to actually connect with and love people for who they are. So I think it takes frank discussions and getting kids to realize and to think through, wait a minute, you know, what are clear boundaries? And I actually think a lot of kids will say, I can do whatever I want to do without having sex, as simply a cop-out because they want to be involved sexually.
Sure.
And they're just looking for biblical justification for it.
Exactly. I appreciate you saying that. I want to move to drugs and alcohol. You know, how do you communicate to kids on this particular issue? I mean, the fact is 86% of church kids will at least try alcohol, and another about a third will smoke pot at least once, and some obviously much more. But how do you communicate to kids on this particular issue? What's the most effective way to do it?
Well, I think it begins by the parents modeling it, by the parents' choices, by the parents' behavior, how they talk about alcohol, going all the way back to an early stage. You're setting a pattern for that kid's life. And let's ask, why is a kid going to have alcohol? It's almost always because of peer pressure, because somebody's pressuring them, and peer pressure is powerful. And I think studies show, and this is true with sexuality, it's true with alcohol, that the more profound security that a young person, a young girl has in who she is from her parents loving her unconditionally and accepting her, the less the peer pressure to drink alcohol is going to affect her and cause her to do it. So I'd say talking about it, setting clear boundaries, and also having that relationship once again. It always gets back to healthy relationships between parents and their kids.
Yeah, it really does get back to that, doesn't it? One of the things that I thought was interesting in your book, Ethics, was you talked about preparation for marriage, or you kind of said the case for marriage. And, you know, a lot of times I read most stuff that's out there, it seems like, to kids on, you know, these kinds of issues, and I hardly ever see them ever write anything on preparation for marriage. And yet, for me anyway, it was the most important decision besides my decision to follow Christ was who I was going to marry.
See, I want kids to think about how their sexuality and their choices now are affecting them for the future and for their life. Kids have the idea, I can do whatever I want to through my teens and through my 20s, and then I'll get married and I'll get mature. Well, that's a myth I want to bust. I want to talk about marriage at this point and have them think about how their choices at 14, 15, 18, 21, whatever it is, are shaping their future marriage. I mean, I teach high school and they always say, begin with the end in mind. Where do you want to be? And then think about how my choices now affect me. So I write about marriage and I talk about it because I'll tell stories about a friend of mine who didn't even have sex before he was married. And he just made out with a lot of girls, didn't think it was a big deal. Well, what happened is when he got married, he started to have certain fantasies of these girls he just made out with. And he said, it's stealing my ability just to love my wife for who she is. Kids need to hear those stories and they need to be challenged to think about how their actions now are affecting them for the rest of their life.
Great input. You know, we've been talking so much about the issue of ethics and sexuality and drug and alcohol abuse and tolerance and all these things, but it gets down to knowing God's will. And I know that's obviously one of the most often asked questions that kids will ask you or anybody. I mean, that's what we care about. How do we know God's will? We want to live by God's will, but really, do we? When somebody comes up to you and says that, what do you say to them?
You know, I've looked up every verse in the Bible that talks about God's will. And I think they fit into two categories. Number one is God's sovereign will, that he has controlled the world and it's heading the direction he wants it to. The other is God's moral will, which we know by the scriptures and we know by conscience. But then there's a whole area of freedom in our life where the Bible doesn't tell us exactly what job you should get or what class you could take or if you should play a sport or not. That's where wisdom comes in. And the Bible talks a ton about, when you're thinking about picking a spouse, how do you use wisdom, which is really the artful use of knowledge. So I want to develop wisdom into my kids. Instead of feel like every decision I make, what is God's choice on it? Say, how does God reveal about this world? How do I make wise decisions? And I think that sets us free to live according to God's will as he's revealed it.
And that's good wisdom from Sean McDowell here as we conclude this part of today's edition of the Homeward Broadcast. You've been listening to parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns' conversation with Sean. He's the author of the book called Ethics, Raising Bold Kids in a Whatever World, and that's a book that Jim highly recommends. If you want to learn more about it, go to homeward.com, go to the radio broadcast listing. You'll see Sean's name is kind of in blue and underlined there. That means you can click onto it and it'll redirect you to his website. You can learn more about what Sean's ministry is all about. Jim, this is a great conversation, and we want to encourage our parents to teach their kids about wisdom, but what final words do you have to share with us as we conclude?
Well, we often talk about things like family devotions and spiritual growth, and all that is very, very important. One of the things that I think we miss as a family, especially in this time of very busy, fast-paced living, is we don't make enough deposits into our families by simply playing together. I mean, when a family plays together, they develop community with each other. This helps to create a sense of belonging, and it's especially a vital principle for kids to experience, playing and putting good deposits in with their family. I remember one time a good friend of mine, he's actually a pastor up in Oregon, he was going through a very difficult season with his 13-year-old son. His son was kind of copying an attitude, wouldn't do the chores, didn't want to go to church anymore, problem because it was a pastor's son. He was becoming pretty rude, obnoxious, and my friend was just stuck for an idea on how to deal with it. Then one day, he remembered something that really he should have been thinking about, was that his son and he both were big basketball fans, so they made two very good decisions to use what I would call playtime to kind of reconnect with each other. Well, first, my friend bought season tickets for the basketball team at their local university. It wasn't all that expensive, but began to take his son to those basketball games. Well, then he went to a sporting goods store and bought a basketball hoop for their driveway. One day when the son and the dad were playing basketball, actually in the middle of the game, they're playing a one-on-one game, he said, "Dad, I want to draw closer to God." And I love what his dad said. He said, "Let's finish this game and then we can talk." And then my friend told me the story. Actually, he had tears in his eyes. He said, "We sat on two basketballs and we talked about God, and he actually allowed me to pray with him. And it's been a defining moment for our relationship." Well, you know what? Again, it's a great illustration that family playtime is about more than just fun and games. It's an opportunity for you to reinforce God-honoring values in your home and in the lives of your children.
It certainly is. And that's one of the reasons why it's one of the 10 building blocks for a solid family. If you want to read more about the other nine, the playtime one's easy, but if you want to read about the other nine, go to homeward.com, HOMEWORD.com for complete details on how you can order a copy of Jim's book, The 10 Building Blocks for a Solid Family. And when you do order from our Homeward Online Resource Center, a portion of the proceeds will actually go to support our ministry, and we truly appreciate that. Homeward is a completely listener-supported broadcast outreach. We are grateful for the facilities at the Azusa Pacific that we're able to use, but as far as this broadcast goes, the writing, the speaking, the seminars, it's completely funded through your tax-deductible donations. And if you can give a gift right now, here we are moving toward the end of 2012. We would love to hear from you. You can give a gift through the mail when you write to Homeward, P.O. Box 1600, San Juan Capistrano, California, the zip code 92693. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.